Okay, good morning. Good morning. This is Bio 231, and it is September 28th. We're in a muscle chapter, and we're scheduled to have our second test a week from today. And that's going to cover, what the heck is that going to cover? The introductory chapter on skeletal system or bones, and it's going to cover the appendicular skeleton, the axial skeleton, and joints, and that's it. So, not the muscles that we're talking about, that's going to be next time. I had this all straightened out. Okay, good, I better just leave that alone. All right, so probably there's some students wondering, well, why the heck don't we have a test this week? Okay, I've heard some students were just a little perturbed by that because we're moving on with muscle chapter, but I don't like to have practicums and lecture tests on the same week. So that's the reason why. I don't know if you agree with that or not. You might agree with that. But it just, I find that a little bit too much sometimes. All right, so that's the reason why that the lecture test is not till next week. But nonetheless, here's a sign-in sheet for today. Go ahead, sign it, and pass it back down to the front when you're done. All right, so does anybody have any questions regarding muscle that we're starting to talk about so far? Anybody have any questions so far? What did we talk about last time? We talked about the structural and functional unit of contraction. What the heck is that structural and functional unit of contraction? What's it called? It's just one word. It's a sarcomere. That's right. So in your mind, you should have a pretty good model or idea what a sarcomere is, where do you find it, and the components and how it works, and then you pretty much know everything about how muscle contraction works. All right, so let's make sure we go over that. All right, so, where do you find sarcomeres at? Well, inside muscle, of course. All right, skeletal muscle and cardiac muscle. And smooth muscle has a little bit different arrangement of the contractile proteins. So smooth muscle really doesn't have a sarcomere, but it has some of the same kinds of proteins as the other kinds of muscles. So smooth muscle is specialized for contraction. So who can tell me what the endpoints of a sarcomere are? It's the Z lines or the Z discs, right? That's the last letter of the alphabet, so that's the endpoints of a sarcomere. So that you should probably at least remember. And what are the proteins that make up a sarcomere called? They are myofilaments, all right? But what are their specific names? Myosin and actin. And they have a kind of special shape. What's the special shape of myosin that's easy to see on illustrations and even underneath a microscope? Okay, they're thick. That's right. So they block a lot of light out. And the actin filaments are the thin filaments. And they're arranged next to each other. And so when you look through a light microscope, it gives skeletal muscle and cardiac muscle the appearance of striations because the thick filaments or the myosin filaments block out a lot of light and it gives that banding kind of a dark color. And then where you only have actin myofilaments, it gives the muscle fiber kind of a light color. So you see those striations due to those proteins. All right, so I gave everybody a homework assignment over the weekend to tell me of those two myofilaments, whether it was actin or myosin. Let's see if I can pull up actually a picture of some of these things. I don't have it open, so let's open it up. Okay, actin or myosin. All right, so here we have a nice illustration. Maybe I'll go back even further, one more over here. Here's a good one. I think this is where we left off last time. Okay, so we see the thick filaments or myosin or thin filaments or actin goes by either name. Which ones of these muscle proteins actually shorten when a muscle contracts? That was your homework. You had to tell me today which one of those two actually shorten when a muscle shortens. Okay, all right, raise your hand if you think myosin. Okay, a couple people. Raise your hand if you think actin. Okay. How many think muscle actually shortens? Raise your hand. Not too many people think muscle shortens. Okay, well, you know what? Muscle does shorten. That's what it's specialized to do. It does contract. All right, so a lot of people just aren't taking a stand one way or the other. All right, well, okay, I need to convince you that indeed muscle does shorten. It does contract. But it's not because any of these proteins shorten or contract. All right, muscle shortens because there's an interaction between actin and myosin, and they actually slide over each other. That's called the sliding filament model. So again, right, I do want you to know what all these different parts of a sarcomere are, right? The endpoints are the Z-discs, and attached to the Z-discs are the actin molecules, and then arranged in the middle are the myosin myofilaments, which are the thick filaments. They're held in position because they're attached to the M-line of the sarcomere, and the actin is held in place because it's attached to the Z-discs. Okay, so furthermore, we did talk about some of the bands that make up skeletal muscle. There is the dark band, right here. So, and that dark band we call the A band, and then we have some light bands that we call the I bands, because the I bands don't contain any myosin, so it's very easy to light to pass through this region right here. All right, so what else can I say? There is, a special region. All right, I guess that's all you really have to know. Okay, A, I, okay. And that the sarcomere repeats over and over and over and over again. And where do you find these sarcomeres? They're found within myofibrils. And the best way to think of a myofibril is being the organelle within the muscle cell for contraction. Okay, so here is a muscle cell, and is loaded with myofibrils. The other thing that we find in the muscle cell are numerous mitochondria. They're scattered all over the place. And that's because muscle contraction does require the product of mitochondria. What does a mitochondrion produce? ATP, that's the energy source. The other thing that we see in skeletal muscle cells or fibers are many nuclei, because these cells are extremely long, and you can see that they're unbranched, they're linear. And at one point in time, they were made up of hundreds of individual muscle cells that fused together to form this fiber. And each of those nuclei still exist within the muscle fiber. Okay, because usually, how many nuclei do we see within a cell? How many do you see?
One.
Usually you just see one, right? But in a skeletal muscle fiber, we see many because they come from the precursors of all the cells that were used to make up this big, long fiber. Okay. What are we going to see about muscle contraction? What is happening? Okay. Well, there is an association between the myosin head group and actin. So let's zoom into a sarcomere. We can see that a myosin is made up of many, many myosin proteins. And it has these arms, right, that are attached to the myosin head group, and these arms can move up and down and can ratchet back and forth. The actin molecule is thinner because it's made up of only how many kinds of actin filaments? There's only two right there, right? There's only two filaments, but the myosin is made up of many, 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 so therefore it's thicker with these head groups. And these head groups can't attach themselves to the myosin when there is a proper signal. Okay, so let's see what else we have here. Okay, so here we have a sarcomere under three conditions. When it is relaxed, all right, and don't forget the endpoints of the sarcomere are what, the Z-discs right here, and we can see this length of actin and this length of myosin, and Let's compare and see what happens when the sarcomere is relaxed compared to when it's fully contracted. This is the easiest state to see. All right, can you tell that this myosin molecule, all right, what is the change in length of this myosin molecule from this first case to the third case down over here? I can't reach up there and show you. Okay. All right, but the distance from here to here compared to the distance from here to here, right, compare rest to when it is contracting, the myosin length is actually the same length, right? It hasn't changed. And what about the length of actin? The distance from here to here is the same as the distance from here to here. So neither actin nor myosin actually shorten when the sarcomere shortens. But can you tell that the sarcomere actually is shorter? Okay, look at the distance from Z to Z in the first case as opposed to Z in the second case. Can you tell which case is shorter? Yeah, the third one is a lot shorter. And why is that? Okay, and that's because the myosin is actually interacting and pulling on the actin molecules, forcing it to slide over the myosin molecule. So what should you look at? Well, in this first case over here, the actin molecule lines up kind of with the second head group on a myosin, okay, right here. But where is the endpoint of actin in a contracted case? All right, it would have lined up over here, but because myosin is pulling it over, and it's pulling it over the myosin molecule, it ends up way over here. Right? Or if we go back to this first condition, right, it would line up way over here. So when actin and myosin slide past each other, right, what band actually disappears? This H band actually disappears. Right? This H band, you can see myosin, but no actin. But when the sarcomere is contracted, do you see a region anywhere where there is myosin, but no actin molecule? Okay, it completely disappears as a result. All right, so you see this intermediate white region, and it is gone, right? So it's just a dark region right here. What other region disappears when muscle contracts? You have the I band, right, which is a very, very light band, which contains only what molecule? Only the actin molecule, and when actin and myosin slide past each other, right, notice that I band basically disappears as well. Okay, because now from Z disk to Z disk, you have the myosin molecule. All right, now what about the dark band? Does the dark band disappear? You see the A band right here, and then you see the A band right here, and it is the same distance. It's the same length. It does not disappear. So only the H zone and the I band disappears when the muscle contracts. All right, so what is a good way picture that you should have in your mind? Well, let's say we have a couple myofilaments right here. What are the two kinds of myofilaments do we have again within the sarcomere? You got myosin and you got actin, okay? So let's pretend I have these two filaments right here. One is myosin and one is actin. All right, and if we put these end to end, all right, we can see what the overall length of a sarcomere is. And we know that the Z disks come together, and I'm saying that's because the actin and myosin slide over each other. All right, so the sarcomere that is going to be made up of these two proteins. All right, now can I get the markers to shorten at all? No, they're going to be the same length. But from tip to tip of the markers, I can get that to shorten by doing what? By having them, hold it like this so that you can see, having them what? Slide over each other. Now what happens to the length of that sarcomere? It basically has shortened by half. All right, but which one of these markers has actually shortened? Neither one of them. So neither the actin or the myosin shorten. They just slide over each other. And that happens for all the thousands and thousands of sarcomeres that line up within a myofibril from one end of the muscle cell all the way to the other. Right? When they get a signal to contract, they slide over each other and the muscle shortens. and it pulls on the tendons on either side of that muscle. All right, so in your book, you could actually measure these actin and myosin myofilaments and take a look for yourself. Okay, so let's see what I have found. Right here. Okay, let's look at this little animation right here. Okay, I don't like that one. Let's look at this one right here. Okay, so let me see. So I'll give you the links to these things. All right, so what do we got right here? What's the primary unit that we're looking at? What's the structural and functional unit of muscle called? It's a sarcomere. What are the endpoints of a sarcomere? The Z-line and the Z-line over here. What filament attaches to the Z-line? It is actin, right? And then in the middle is the myosin. What else can we call this myosin filament? Okay, actin is over here. So we can't call it actin. We could call it a thick filament, just like the actin we could call a thin filament. Okay, so wherever you have the thick filaments, that forms a really dark band that we call the A band. Right, where you have only actin filaments, this is where you have a light band, which we call the I band. Right, so remember, there's a nice A in dark, there's a nice I in light, so it's easy to remember what these bands are called. Okay, so furthermore, what else do we have right here? We have this H zone, which only contains myosin. We don't have any overlap of actin right here, so it looks a little bit lighter compared to the rest of the A band, which has both the actin and myosin. We can see the cross bridges between myosin, formed by this myosin head group right here, that can interact with the actin molecule and actually pull it toward midline of the sarcomere. All right, so let's watch what might transpire as the actin and myosin pulls. Okay, notice the ratcheting action of these myosin head groups pulling on the actin. And what is getting shorter? Is the actin molecule getting shorter? Or the myosin getting shorter? The only thing that's happening is what? The Z lines are getting pulled closer and closer to each other. So neither of the myofilaments are getting shorter. They're sliding over each other. Now, what band just disappeared right here? Or what zone just disappeared? Yeah, that H zone just disappeared. Because now everywhere that you look inside the sarcomere, at least in the middle, you have both the myosin and actin molecule. So it has disappeared. And what else is getting shorter? What other band is getting shorter? This I band is disappearing as well because the Z discs or Z lines are getting pulled closer and closer and closer to each other. Okay, so that's a nice model that you should have in your mind. The H zone disappears, the I band narrows, right? But the A band remains unchanged when a muscle contracts. Okay, so let's look maybe I did like this. This one right here. So let me pause it. Okay, so here we have a Z disc and a Z disc, or if you want to call them a Z line, that's fine with me. What does that define? From Z line to Z line, that defines a sarcomere. All right, and what protein is this attached to the Z line? That's an actin, and what's floating in the middle? That's the myosin myofilament, and myosin has these head groups right here that under the right signal for contraction, they can actually reach up and grab hold of the actin molecule, and then they're going to ratchet. They're going to articulate, pulling the actin molecule, okay, toward the midline of the sarcomere. And it requires ATP. We'll see where that comes in. All right, so the signal for muscle contraction actually comes from a calcium ion that we see right here. There are two other molecules. Here's a troponin molecule and a tropomyosin. When the muscle cell is relaxed, the tropomyosin covers up the binding sites for the myosin head group, and it can't bind to actin. Right? But when the signal is present, namely this calcium signal, it's going to bind to troponin, and it's going to move tropomyosin out of the way so that the myosin molecule can bind to actin and start pulling. So let's see if we can see this with this video. So calcium binds to troponin, and that causes tropomyosin to move out of the way, revealing the binding sites for this myosin head group. And when energy is present, the myosin head can bind to this active site, and then it's going to ratchet. And when it does, that's going to pull actin and myosin over each other, and they're going to slide over each other. Ah, see that ratcheting? And you see actin moving, sliding past the myosin. All right, then this head group is going to release if ATP is present. All right, then it's going to reach out once again and grab something a little bit ahead or forward of the previous binding site. So it's going to attach to actin once again. Okay, but the calcium still has to be present. And then what's going to happen? It's going to ratchet once again and cause actin and myosin to slide over each other. And this process is going to repeat itself over and over and over and over again, hundreds of times a second, causing actin and myosin to slide past each other. Okay, and so what's going to happen to the Z-discs? They're going to get closer and closer and closer to each other as a result. All right, so what ion do you need for muscle to contract? What ion do you need? We talked, yeah, you need that calcium ion. All right, where else was calcium important in your body? In your bones. You need to have calcium to have strong bones. All right, but say if you're running low on calcium, where would you rather have calcium in your body? Would you rather have calcium stored in your bones so that your bones are strong? Or would you rather have calcium ions in your muscles so that muscle can contract? If you were going to have to pick one over the other, what would you rather have, strong bones or muscle contraction? Muscle contraction, because what do you need muscle contraction for? You need for movement, yeah, okay. But you also need muscle contraction to breathe. Your diaphragm is skeletal muscle. We haven't looked at that one yet, but we're going to look at the diaphragm. You know at least where it is between the thoracic cavity and abdominal cavity. So without proper calcium levels, you couldn't breathe. How long can you stay alive without breathing? Minutes, right? And so your body makes that same judgment call as well. It says, okay, strong bones or breathing? Your body says, forget the bones, you got to breathe. So what happens as we get older? We lose calcium in our bones because there are many more important processes in our body that require calcium. And muscle contraction is just one of those. Okay, so that kind of underscores how important it is not to put your body in a position to choose whether it wants strong bones or muscle contraction. Right? Because it's what's going to lose out. Strong bones are always going to lose out. So how do you protect yourself from that? Proper diet of calcium, vitamin D, right, and exercise, especially for women premenopausally, so that calcium is put into bones as what? A storage form of calcium, so that as we get older, your body can go and get calcium from bones for muscle contraction, and they won't get weak. All right, so that's what is so important. All right, so that calcium is necessary in skeletal muscle for contraction. All right, so I'll probably have you watch, or I'll have a link available for you to watch online, all of these videos right here. You can take this little quiz afterwards. You don't have to give me the results of the quiz, but that certainly will help you understand whether or not you really understand what a sarcomere is, how it's put together, and how important that muscle signal is. So again, this video here just shows the myosin myofilament, the actin. You can see myosin is thicker, the actin is thinner. Right? The myosin head group, which binds to the actin when there is a proper chemical signal, and when ATP is present, this myosin head group can ratchet and is going to pull the actin toward the midline of the sarcomere. And that happens from end to end, all the thousands of sarcomeres. So the whole muscle fiber contracts as a result. All right, so these are actually really nice videos showing the sliding of the myofilaments past each other. Okay. All right, so who's got a question regarding the sarcomere? And the sarcomere is a feature that we have with any kind of muscle that is striated. Can you remember from the histology chapter, what are the kinds of muscle that we have? The three main kinds of muscle I just told you. You got skeletal, you got cardiac, and you've got smooth. Which of those three main kinds are striated? Cardiac and skeletal, right? Smooth muscle is not striated. So smooth muscle doesn't have a sarcomere, but cardiac muscle and skeletal muscle does. So they're kind of similar in that regard. All right, so here is just a little prose of actually what I showed you in the videos and talked about so far. Okay. All right, but don't forget that Titan molecule. Where was that Titan at? Titan, we don't have it on this video. I think we have some Titan on this molecule. We don't have Titan on this one. Where did we have Titan? Maybe we had it on this one. Oh, don't have it on this one either. Okay. That's okay. But we do have it in your books. All right, the Titan molecule is diagrammed as this little yellow spring right here. All right, and it's an elastic protein. So what can you tell me about elastic proteins? They can stretch, yeah? And when you let go of tension, they go back to their original length. All right, so that Titan molecule can't force the muscle to contract, but it allows the muscle to extend, and then after a muscle is stretched, it allows it to go back to its original length. All right, so that's the job of the Titan. So muscle contraction is due to what? Actin and myosin interactions. All right, so that's the most important thing to realize with that one. All right, so you might say, well, how is it that you can control muscle contraction? All right, because you can voluntarily control what kind of muscle in your body? Skeletal muscle. Okay, and as a matter of fact, that's the only thing that you can control with your conscious thoughts in your body. Everything else gets taken care of automatically. Cardiac muscle and glands and smooth muscle gets taken care of with the autonomic nervous system. All right, so if we look at these, here's a really good exam figure. And we can see a skeletal muscle cell membrane right here. What do we call the membrane on a skeletal muscle cell or muscle fiber? It's going to start with sarco, right? Because everything having to do with muscle cells is going to start with sarco. This is the sarcolemma. That's the cell membrane of a skeletal muscle cell. And the endoplasmic reticulum we see in blue. How did I do? Is that blue? Blue. Very good. Okay. So the blue color is the smooth endoplasmic reticulum. And what did you learn the function of smooth endoplasmic reticulum was in the cell chapter? Anybody remember? What about rough endoplasmic reticulum? What's rough endoplasmic reticulum for? Protein synthesis, because it has ribosomes on it, right? The rough has ribosomes, so it can make proteins. But what the heck was the job of the smooth endoplasmic reticulum? Lipid synthesis, because it doesn't have ribosomes. But there's another important function, and it stores calcium ions. And hopefully your book told you that, but I'm not so sure it did. All right, but I mentioned it in lecture for sure. The smooth endoplasmic reticulum can also store calcium ions. What are calcium ions good for in your body besides strong bones? Yeah, muscle contraction. Okay, so here we have a skeletal muscle, and the blue right here represents the smooth endoplasmic reticulum in skeletal muscle, but that's not really making lipids. It's really storing what? Calcium ions, right, that are going to allow actin and myosin filaments to slide over each other. And you can see it's a net that actually surrounds the whole myofibril. All right, so here you see a nice muscle cell with a bunch of myofibrils. And don't forget, what's the best way to think of a myofibril? It's an organelle designed to do what? To actually shorten, right? So a myofibril is the organelle inside of a muscle fiber that contracts because what is it made up of from end to end? Sarcomeres, right? From one end to the other, it's just one sarcomere lined up after another, after another, after another. And surrounding the myofibril is a smooth endoplasmic reticulum, which is storing calcium. So in order for this sarcomere to contract or to shorten, it has to be flooded with calcium ions. From the, we don't call it smooth endoplasmic reticulum, we call it the sarcoplasmic reticulum. All right, so if anybody specifically asks you what's the function of sarcoplasmic reticulum, you're going to say, well, it stores calcium ions so that the myofilaments can slide over each other. All right. Well, your next question probably is, well, I can see how calcium ions from the sarcoplasmic reticulum cause a muscle to contract, but what the heck causes the sarcoplasmic reticulum to release calcium? Right? Because that's under your conscious control of your mind. The sarcoplasmic reticulum can't make up its own mind whether it's going to release calcium or not. It's got to be told to do that by your mind. So how is it told? Well, there are nerve signals, nerve impulses that come from your brain down through your spinal cord that go out various nerves. And when we start to look at the nervous system in a couple weeks, you'll see where those signals actually originate. Right, but there are electrical signals that go out the nerves, and then those electrical signals stimulate this muscle with electrical activity. So there are electrical signals that can flow over the sarcolemma of this skeletal muscle cell. And those electrical signals then can hop on this little tube right here called a transverse tubule, because what kind of section of this of a cell do we have right here? Is that a transverse section or longitudinal section? Okay, if it's cut on edge like this, that's what we call a transverse section, right? A longitudinal section would be along the long axis of this cell right here. So these T-tubules take that electrical signal that's flowing over the sarcolemma, and that electrical signal can flow deep into the muscle cell via these T-tubules. And when that electrical signal flows through the T-tubules, it causes calcium ions to leak out of the sarcoplasmic reticulum. All right, so there is an electrical signal. And so we call that excitation-contraction coupling. All right, so the electrical signal is the excitation of the skeletal muscle cell. It causes the release of calcium from the sarcoplasmic reticulum. It floods between all of the myofilaments. And what does that calcium signal these myofilaments to do? Somebody's got to tell me. Otherwise, we've got to look at the videos again. So what does calcium do? It allows actin and myosin to slide over each other. And when they slide over each other, what happens to my wrists of my hands? They're getting closer together. So the sarcomere, but all of the sarcomeres within a myofibril shorten and muscle contracts. All right, so let's change the structure of this muscle cell. Let's take out the sarcoplasmic reticulum, but leave the transverse tubule right here. All right, so electrical signal can get deep down into the muscle cell, but if there's no sarcoplasmic reticulum, will this muscle cell ever contract? Somebody said no. I like your answer. Okay, so we're changing the structure of this cell. What are we changing also besides the structure? We're changing the function of that cell. All right, so I want you to kind of always link those concepts up. If we change the structure of something, we're going to be changing the function of it. And why is the function changing? because this muscle cell no longer has any calcium ions, right? Because we've taken that sarcoplasmic reticulum out, and that calcium ion is a signal for these myofilaments to slide over each other. And so that signal is going to be missing. All right. Now, what happens if we put the sarcoplasmic reticulum back and then remove the T-tubule? Will this muscle be able to contract? Why or why not? It still can make ATP because here's a mitochondria. We didn't take the mitochondria out. But if we take the T-tubule away, the electrical signal now is trapped on the surface of the cell membrane. What did we call the cell membrane? That's the sarcolemma. All right. And if that electrical signal is trapped on the surface of the cell, it can't signal the release of calcium from the sarcoplasmic reticulum. And again, the muscle won't contract. It needs that electrical signal from the surface of the cell. And that's brought to the interior of the cell by these T-tubules. All right, so this is a particularly good illustration for you guys to memorize and to know what the functions of the different components of these different structures are. And the communication between the T-tubules and the sarcoplasmic reticulum is so important that there's a special structure right in this region right here, and we call that a triad, because the ends of the sarcoplasmic reticulum are what we call the terminal cisternae of the sarcoplasmic reticulum, the ends right here. So if we take two terminal cisternae, put it together with a T-tubule, we get something that's called a triad. All right, so that shows the special communication between the electrical signal in the T-tubule and the terminal cisternae of the sarcoplasmic reticulum. And as soon as one part of the sarcoplasmic reticulum starts to release calcium, the whole sarcoplasmic reticulum starts to release calcium. And then finally, right, if there is calcium being released from the sarcoplasmic reticulum, what can you tell me about the interaction of actin and myosin? They're going to start sliding past each other, right, as long as there's ATP available to allow that to happen. All right, so in the notes that you have right here, you've got a nice prose that describes all of these different features that we've been talking about. And that leaves us pretty much with one last thing, and that is, how does a nerve communicate with a muscle cell? So I want you to become a little familiar with how a nerve communicates with a muscle cell. And that takes us to another concept of a structural and functional unit. All right, so let's just kind of review. What's the structural and functional unit of life? The cell, that's right. So if you want to know something about life, you really got to know something about a cell. All right. What's another structural and functional unit? Oh, structural and functional unit of compact bone. How's compact bone put together? This might be important for the test coming up because bones are on the test. What is the structural and functional unit of compact bone? It is the osteon. So if you look at a transverse section of an osteon, what does it look like? Circles inside circles, which are really what? Tubes inside tubes inside tubes. And between the tubes, what do you got? You have those lacunae with living cells in there, remember? So bone is a living tissue. And you got the canaliculi, so that material can diffuse from one lacunae to another to nourish the cells, right, to bring oxygen and nutrients and all that kind of stuff. And in the center of an osteon is what? The Haversian canal, that's where the nerves and blood vessels are, right? So that underscores, again, that bone is really a living tissue, because if you break it, what's going to happen? It's going to hemorrhage, right? It's going to, because it's filled with blood, it's highly vascular. What's the good thing about that? It heals relatively quickly, right, when you break a bone, because it's got that nice, rich blood supply. All right, so we got life, structural and functional unit of life, structural and functional unit of compact bone, structural and functional unit of contraction is what? Is a sarcomere. Okay. Now let's talk about how cells communicate with each other. And guess what? There's another structural and functional unit there that I want you to appreciate, and I want you to know in one word what it's called. Okay, does anybody have a wild guess what it could be called? Because we got to talk about that next. Oh, you know what? I sort of have it on the screen. It's called a synapse. All right, so the way that cells communicate with each other is through a synapse. How about a marking pen? Synapse. And we got two kinds of synapses that we're going to be interested in. The first kind is by far the most common, so I'll just say that one first. This is what we call a chemical synapse. And the second kind is pretty rare. This is an electrical synapse. But we get to talk about both in this chapter, so this is a great time, actually, to talk about these things. All right, so, and again, what the heck is a synapse? It's the, I don't want to write the whole thing on the board, structural and functional unit, right? And if we change the structure of a synapse, guess what we're going to change? We're going to change the function of it as well, right? So you got to know the basic structure, and then from that, you'll understand how it basically functions. But if we change the structure, then the function is going to be changed. All right, and that's going to be the basis of a lot of important medicine that eventually you're going to learn. All right, so here we have on this slide, we have a neuron or a nerve cell, and you can see it can branch into a couple of little terminal branches right here, and it's going to associate with a skeletal muscle cell. Now, how could you guess this is a skeletal muscle cell? You see striations. I like it. All right. It's also what? Nice and linear. You see many nuclei. All right. So those are all characteristics of a skeletal muscle cell. They're straight. They're unbranched. They contain many nuclei. No other kind of muscle cell has that. And, of course, you see striations in there. And the striations are due to what structure inside of a skeletal muscle cell? Yeah, the myosin and actin all being arranged to make a, what I really want you to think of is what, a sarcomere. But you're right when you say actin and myosin, right? It's that arrangement of actin and myosin. But it's basically what? A sarcomere repeating over and over and over again within these little myofibrils right here from one end of the cell to the other. All right, and this skeletal muscle cell is going to contract when it gets an electrical signal flowing over the muscle cell, the sarcolemma, because then it's going to flow down the T-tubule and excite that triad to release calcium, and then these myofibrils are going to slide over each other. All right, well, how does that electrical signal from a neuron, okay, get into this muscle cell right here? And what we have, we see a space between the neuron and the muscle cell. So here is our first look at what a synapse really is, right? And because of that space, the electrical signal can't go directly from the nerve cell into the muscle cell because it has to jump across that space. Have you ever seen electricity jump across a space from one object to another? What did you call that? What could you call that? Have you ever seen electricity jump from one thing to another thing? Lightning. That's right. That's exactly what I'm thinking. Lightning. And guess what? You think we have lightning inside our body? Oh, you know what? We don't. We don't have, there's nothing that goes psh, crack, you know, and a spark. What about static electricity? You know, if you touch somebody, sometimes you see a spark. Well, our body can't produce sparks like that, right? Across this space. Because right, we just don't produce that much electricity. So there's got to be another method that information can go from a neuron into the muscle. Okay, and so this is the most prevalent kind of synapse, which is what we call what? A chemical synapse. All right, so let me show you where the chemical comes into play. But let's look at the structure first. All right, so the structure of a synapse here is... All right, an axon coming down. It's almost touching the muscle cell, but not quite. All right, this is, and you see a little bulge at the end of this this nerve, and we call that an axon terminal, and sometimes it looks like a little button, so we call that sometimes a terminal button. All right, sometimes we leave it in a foreign language. Sometimes we call it a Bouton terminale. Sounds what? Italian. All right, Bouton terminale. Or sometimes we call it a terminal Bouton. So it runs around by a number of different names. All right, so that's just the way anatomy is. You got to kind of be familiar with all those little bit different names. And so there's a swelling in this terminal button right here, because it contains a lot of mitochondria. What's the job of these mitochondria? Make a lot of energy, ATP. But it's also loaded with these vesicles. And these vesicles, since they're in a synapse, we call them synaptic vesicles. And inside these synaptic vesicles are chemicals that we call neurotransmitters. All right, and why do you think we call these a neurotransmitter? Because it's going to be secreted by a neuron. Okay, so a neurotransmitter because they're going to be secreted by a neuron and they're going to transmit a signal someplace, namely across the synapse. All right, so here is the synapse with a space between these the neuron and the muscle cell, and that space is what we call the synaptic cleft. All right, that space. And that synaptic cleft prevents electricity to hop back and forth from one cell to the other because we just don't have lightning bolts between these two different cells. All right, so let's follow what will happen. All right, so within a neuron, there will be an electrical signal, and it's going to reach the axon terminus or Bouton terminale. When that electrical signal reaches the terminal button right here, it's going to allow calcium to enter the Bouton. All right, so there's got to be calcium outside the cell to enter, and calcium then is the signal that's going to allow this vesicle that's containing neurotransmitter to fuse with the what we call the presynaptic membrane. All right, and when it fuses, guess what happens to the neurotransmitter that's inside this vesicle? It gets released into this synaptic cleft. And then it's going to move from high concentration to low concentration across the synaptic cleft, and it's going to bump into the cell membrane of the muscle cell. What do we call the cell membrane? That's the sarcolemma. And within this sarcolemma, the membrane, there are special proteins that bind the neurotransmitter, and when they do, that's going to start another electrical signal on the cell membrane. And that electrical signal is going to flow over the whole sarcolemma, but it's also going to flow where? Down into the T-tubules and then stimulate the sarcoplasmic reticulum to release calcium inside the myofibril so that actin and myosin will slide past each other. All right. So what I want you to get a feel of is how information flows from one cell to another. In a neuron, it flows as an electrical signal, okay? And over the surface of a muscle cell, it flows as an electrical signal, and even down through this T-tubule as an electrical signal. But how does that information move across the synapse? Does it move as an electrical signal or a chemical signal? And it flows, right, as a chemical signal because it's the neurotransmitter that is being released from the neuron, causing the electrical signal to develop once again on the muscle cell. So information goes through this chemical synapse as an electrical signal through the neuron, as what kind of signal across the synapse? A chemical signal across the synapse, and then it gets converted back into an electrical signal again on the muscle fiber cell. All right, so with a chemical synapse, the signal is electrical, gets converted into chemical, and then it gets converted back into an electrical signal again. Okay, and that has some really important features to it, which you'll learn about probably for the rest of your life, but let's see what we can, you know, when we get to cardiac muscle, I'll contrast it with the electrical kind of synapse. All right, so these folds right here, we call the motor end plate. Because what does a motor do? What does a motor do for you? Why do you have a motor someplace? Where do you have a motor? I got a motor in a toothbrush. What does it make my toothbrush do? It makes it move around, right? So motors do what? Make things move around. Like you have a motor in your car, you might have a motor in your... Anybody have a motor in your cell phone? Is that like you say, hey, and the lid opens up? I don't think I've seen any like that. You have to open the lid yourself still. Okay, but what else has a motor in it that's kind of cool? Some people might have the trunk on their car, or maybe the sliding door on your van, right? You push a button and what happens? It closes the door, closes the trunk for you. It's a motor, right? So a motor makes something move. All right, so when this muscle is stimulated, what is the muscle going to do? It's going to move. So it's like a motor, right? A muscle is like a motor because it makes things move. So hence, we call this the motor end plate because that's what stimulates this muscle to contract. All right, and since the muscle is going to move, it's going to have a tendency to do what? Pull away from this neuron right here, because neurons don't move. They're not motors at all. Neurons are specialized to carry electrical information. So the neuromuscular junction, which is what we're looking at, neuro because it's part neuron and it's part muscle. We call it a neuromuscular junction. Has a special feature. There are special arrangements that keep the axon terminus attached to the muscle because when the muscle moves, you don't want it to pull away from the axon terminus. Because if it did, what would happen? Then you would never be able to contract that muscle again because the synapse would be destroyed, right? So again, there's always that link between structure and function. So the neuromuscular junction has special connections. We see what a really deep connection that kind of looks like a ball and socket joint right here so that when the muscle contracts, it doesn't pull away from this Bouton terminale. All right, so that's the only specialization that this synapse has over other kinds of synapses between neurons that we find in the brain and spinal cord. All right, some other things about this particular synapse is, what was I going to say? Oh, all right. So the chemical signal is what we call a neurotransmitter, but on this diagram, it doesn't say neurotransmitter, all right? It says acetylcholine, all right? So acetylcholine is just one specific example of a neurotransmitter. So in your body, there are numerous kinds of neurotransmitters. Acetylcholine is just one important one of a number of neurotransmitters. So if somebody asks you, what good is acetylcholine, could you tell them anything about acetylcholine? What is it? It belongs to a general class of compounds that we call neurotransmitters. And in particular, where does acetylcholine work in your body?
Muscles.
Right? In muscles, okay? And in particular, we see here skeletal muscle, okay? And so the best way maybe to say that is that acetylcholine works at the neuromuscular junction. And the neuromuscular junction is found in skeletal muscles. All right, so try to organize all that in your mind, that acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter. Now, why do we call it a neurotransmitter? Because it's being secreted by a neuron, and it's going to stimulate another cell across the synapse, or across, in this particular case, the neuromuscular junction. All right, so with a chemical synapse, what do we got? We've got a neuron, and that's going to go into a synapse, and that's going to go take information into a muscle. So what's the nature of this information that flows from one cell to another? Within the neuron, it is what? Electrical. Across the synapse, it gets converted into a chemical signal. And And on the muscle, it gets converted back into an electrical signal. All right, and in particular, this chemical signal, what's the general name for this chemical signal? This is probably a really handy diagram to have to jot down. I don't have it in my notes because I can't think of it every time I give this lecture, but it's good. What's the general name of this chemical that's going to go across the synapse? Okay, pretty close. It's called a neurotransmitter because it's being secreted by what? This neuron right here. All right, so see all these chemicals inside this synaptic vesicle that contains neurotransmitter. And at the neuromuscular junction, what's the specific name of this neurotransmitter? That is acetylcholine. Acetylcholine, sometimes that's abbreviated A, capital C, little H, acetylcholine, so you don't have to write acetylcholine down. As a matter of fact, some people just say ACH all the time. Now, just for fun, does anybody know of any other kinds of neurotransmitters in your body that are used by different kinds of synapses? Because you don't want to have all the same kind of synapse in your body, because then you wouldn't have control over different organs at different times. There's something called epinephrine, okay? And that's the same thing as adrenaline, or norepinephrine. That would be the same thing as noradrenaline. Probably you've heard of adrenaline. Maybe you've heard of serotonin, okay, dopamines. There's many, many different kinds of neurotransmitters. We don't get to talk about many of them in anatomy class, but in physiology, we do. That's really cool stuff, okay? And we're going to talk, in physiology, talk a lot more about the synapse, all right? But this is it for the neuromuscular junction, but I do want to wrap up by saying that there is an ion, another ion that's necessary for these cells to communicate with each other, a neuron and a muscle. There's got to be a specific ion that is going to control how what we call synaptic transmission works. So here is just an overview of synaptic transmission of what kind of synapse? The chemical synapse. So there's an ion that controls synaptic transmission of a chemical synapse. And it's on the slide up over there. And you see calcium ions. Okay? So again, what else do you have calcium in your body for? Bones. Okay? Make strong bones. For muscle. Muscle contraction. All right? For the sliding of the filaments. And now for synaptic transmission, maybe I should write that down, synaptic transmission, all right, that's how cells can communicate with each other through chemical synapses, right, because calcium has to enter the terminal button in order for neurotransmitter to be released, all right, so now you know three purposes for calcium, strong bones, muscle contraction, and to allow neurons to communicate with other cells in your body. All right, so of those three, which is would be your choice to be the least important? Yeah, because if your brain isn't working, okay, you're only going to be alive for seconds, right? 2 or 3 seconds. And calcium is important for different neurons to communicate with each other, not just muscles, right? So calcium is important for synaptic transmission, muscle contraction, strong bones, and your body realizes that the last part of your body, or the least significant part of your body that should have the proper level of calcium is your skeletal system, because it's much more important for your brain to function and your muscles to function rather than just have strong bones. Okay, so again, as we lose calcium as we get older, you got to protect yourself by doing what when you're young? Diet and... You can't forget about exercise. Yeah, that's really important. Diet in terms of vitamin D as well as having proper calcium in your diet as well. All right, so that's the chemical synapse. All right, so this probably is an exam figure, so make sure that you can identify all these things. Like this right here, mitochondria. Oh, you don't have a lead line for that. You don't have to know. All right, but T-tubule, you see that calcium going in there, acetylcholine, this is a neurotransmitter. Okay. I'm missing something. Let's go back to, here. Okay, so how is it that you have the ability, well, let me tell you something about a single muscle cell. When a single muscle cell gets stimulated, it contracts with its full ability to develop tension. It has an all or none response. So when a single cell gets told to contract, if it's a skeletal muscle, guess what it does? It contracts, right? It can't make up its own mind whether it's going to contract or not. For instance, right, if I tell the muscles in my body, my skeletal muscles, to pick up that pen right there, can they ever tell me, no, I don't want to do it? No, because it's under voluntary control. They've got to follow my mind's commands, right? And a single cell is going to contract with 100% of its ability to do that, right? So how is it that when I tell my body or my muscles to pick up that pen, right, I can pick up this light pen, and or the second case would be if I pick up that pen, if I tell all the muscles to contract and it's a really light object, what could happen? Boom, I could knock myself out, okay? So how is it that your body can say, just contract very gently to pick up something light, or contract with a lot of force, like if I was trying to pick up a car battery or something that's really heavy, how is it that I can pick something really heavy up, but do it properly without giving myself a bloody nose, if every muscle contracts at 100% of its contraction every single time? And the answer to that is, if you have a muscle, like what we have right here, an organ, okay, you can see that it is made up of a bunch of these bundles. What's a proper name for all these bundles right here? Those are fascicles, right? And what's the building block of a fascicle? It is muscle fibers, or numerous muscle cells. So here we see a numerous muscle cells right here, right? And it's because of the chemical synapse allows only certain muscle fibers to contract, but not all of them, for instance, within this muscle, if this was, say, the biceps brachii. All right, so we see a number of nerves on this diagram. As a matter of fact, we see two nerves. There's a red one and a blue one. How'd I do? Kind of dark for blue. Is that blue? Purplish? Okay. And motor neuron number one, this purple one, you can see branches, and it's going to have a neuromuscular junction on how many different muscle cells? One or two, right? So when a nerve impulse comes down motor neuron number one, this muscle cell is going to contract, and this one is going to contract, and what about all the others in this muscle right here? Say all the thousands of other muscle fibers. What's going to happen to them? They're going to stay relaxed, right? Because they're not connected to this motor neuron number one via this neuromuscular junction. All right, so when these two muscle cells contract, what kind of contraction is that going to produce? A really strong, vigorous contraction, or kind of a nice, weak contraction? A weak contraction, that's right. All right, but now let's just say your body needs a little bit more of a contraction out of this muscle. All right, it can now recruit this second motor unit. So the red neuron over here, right, and this one is connected to three muscle fibers, all right? And so if motor unit number one and motor unit number two both have electrical impulses on them, now we're going to have five muscle fibers contracting. That's going to produce basically a little bit stronger contraction. So this is what we use to explain how a muscle organ can contract with different intensities, graded intensities, particular to a particular task, because it will recruit motor units. Some motor units are very large. For instance, motor units for postural muscles in your back, where you don't do a lot of, you don't need to have a lot of dexterity, either they contract or not. The motor units are going to be large, a large number of muscle fibers and one neuron, but in certain places of your body where you need to have a lot of control of graded contractions, like your hands, your face, all right, then you're going to have very few muscle fibers for every motor neuron right here, so that you have much finer control over that part of your body. So make sure you know what the definition of a motor unit is. It is what? A motor neuron and all of the muscle fibers that it innervates. All right, so can you see that it is possible to contract this muscle fiber without contracting this muscle fiber? Because they're connected to what? Different motor units, right? They're connected to different motor units. All right, so that's the beauty of skeletal muscle. All right, now what feature, what kind of synapse allows, say, motor unit number 2 to contract independent of motor unit number 1? It's due to the chemical synapse. All right, and that will make more sense when we start to talk about cardiac muscle, which is coming up next. Okay. All right, so the chemical synapse allows you to have fine discriminative control over various muscle fibers. All right, so let's take a look at cardiac muscle. Where's cardiac muscle at? Okay, so here's a pretty good picture of cardiac muscle. And how would you recognize this to be cardiac muscle? And maybe not some other kind of muscle. How would you know that this is muscle right here? I see striations, right? And so I can see what, the A band right here? Can you see that, or should I zoom it in? All right, so let's go up over here. I can see the A band. What band is this right where I have the cursor? That's the... You gotta have that on the tip of your tongue. Is it a dark band or a light band? It's a light band. And what do we call the light band? I. Okay, so it's pretty easy to appreciate that. All right, so what do we have between, what do we call this structure right in here? That is a sarcomere, right? Remember, and that's made up of actin and myosin. And this thin little line right here, that's called the... Can anybody remember what that is? What's the end point of a sarcomere called? Yeah, that's a Z line, right? So here are some Z lines here and here. All right, so cardiac muscle, oh, here are the definitions right here for you, right? So so this is cardiac muscle because I only see one nucleus per cell. It's not multinucleated. And I also know this is cardiac muscle because of the branching patterns. Skeletal muscle is what? Long and linear. It's not branched. Furthermore, what are these connections between skeletal muscle cells, cardiac muscle cells called? Intercalated discs. So that's another nice feature of cardiac muscle. Muscles are short. Skeletal muscles are really long. The other thing that you notice is that a cardiac muscle cell is not linear. It is, what do we call this? It is branched. And that has some really important implications. Okay. So back to this intercalated disc. There are special junctions within the intercalated disc that glue the endpoints of those muscle cells together very tightly so that when one shortens and pulls on the neighboring muscle cell, it doesn't do what? Doesn't pull apart. They got to be all connected together. So when one muscle cell pulls, the heart doesn't rip apart because the muscle cells should be all stuck together. There's something else in an intercalated disc. All right, so if here's a disc, there are holes. There are special holes within the cell membranes that go from one cell to the other. These things are called gap junctions. All right, so there are holes in the membrane, so there can be ions that can move from one cell into the other, and there's a charge on sodium. We call that an ion. It has an electrical charge. So if an electrical charge can move from one cell into the other, that is actually inducing a current. So it allows for electricity to go from one cell right into the neighboring cell. And then when it's in this cell, what can it do? It can move into the next neighboring cell. And so what is that electrical signal, what is that electrical signal able to do? If it enters one myocardial cell or one heart cell, where does it end up? It can go through the whole heart because the whole heart has these intercalated discs and gap junctions. So when the heart contracts or when the heart is signaled to contract, when one is stimulated, what does the whole heart do? The whole heart contracts, right? Because it would be fatal if one part of the heart were to contract and then another part and then another part and another part. The heart should contract as a unit, and the heart can contract as a unit because it has these gap junctions. So these gap junctions is a way for these cells to communicate with each other. But how do they communicate with each other? Via chemical synapse? No, it's through an electrical synapse, right? So the gap junctions are the structures that allow cardiac muscle cells, all right, to form electrical synapses. The beauty of that is that if one myocardial cell is stimulated to contract, what happens to the whole heart? It gets stimulated to contract as well. Now, would that work very well for skeletal muscle? Is it a good thing or a bad thing that skeletal muscle, which is what, voluntary muscle, doesn't have gap junctions between all the cells? Or let's think of an example. What would happen to you if your skeletal muscles had gap junctions? Okay, so for instance, I tell my body to pick up that pen, I reach out to pick up that pen, what would happen to my skeletal muscles? Everything would contract at once. Not very good, right, for coordinating, for controlling your body, right? So skeletal muscle has chemical synapses, cardiac muscle has electrical synapses because they behave inherently different and they should behave inherently different. All right, so you don't need neurotransmitters within the heart to have all those muscle fibers contract. And the heart, so here, all right, here is kind of a picture of your heart. It has a number of different chambers that we're going to learn about. All right, there's a couple chambers up over here and up over here. But here is, and there, here's blood in a chamber, here's blood in a chamber right here, and all of this area right here is muscle tissue. So the heart has a heart wall has a certain thickness to it. Right. So how is it that electrical signals can go from the superficial layer to the deep layer within the heart wall? Okay, we said that neighboring cells have gap junctions between them. But when the heart contracts, we want these cells up over here to contract, but these deeper cells, we want them to contract as well. How does that electrical signal get down into these deeper layers? Because these cells have a special structure associated with them, different than skeletal muscle. Namely, let's look back at this slide. They're what? They're branched. So if we stimulate this one up over here, the stimulation not only goes right and left, but it does what? It goes down into deeper and deeper and deeper subsequent layers of the heart because the cells are branched. Right, without that branching pattern, one layer of the heart would contract, but that wouldn't be good. You want the whole wall thickness to contract. All right, so I think we're going to finish up with smooth muscle next time, but where's that sign-in sheet at? Who's got the sign-in sheet? It's up there. Who needs it? Anybody need the sign-in sheet? So I tell you what, just bring it on down to the front and whoever needs it can do it. And good luck on your practicums, everybody. Yeah, question. The intercalated discs have two important functions. It glues the two cells together so that they can't pull apart when they contract. And the intercalated disc also allows for electrical synapses so that one cell is stimulated to contract, all the neighbors contract as well. So the heart can contract as a unit.
Hello.
Hi.
What's the
It's coming. I know.
Yes, you do if you want credit, so you don't get dropped.